how you been?
Hey, Mark, I'm doing all right.
Hey, let's talk about Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Not the movie, necessarily, but the pinball machine, which came out in 2019, and it is a Jersey Jack pinball machine.
All right.
This one, this one's created, by the way, by Pat Lawler, who you might remember from our last episode.
Yeah, that's great to hear. Still designing pinball machines.
Still designing, yeah. And he went on to be a seminal part of Jersey Jack, as far as I understand.
Oh, okay, great.
So before we get into the pinball stuff, I want to talk a little bit about Roald Dahl, who is, of course, the beloved children's author of books like Matilda.
Get in the car, Melinda.
Matilda.
Whatever.
The Fantastic Mr. Fox, James and the Giant Peach, and
Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Yes, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. I thought I could stump you. Not called Willy Wonka. If you had to, not to put you on the spot, I guess, did you read any Roald Dahl books as a kid?
Yeah, I read, I think, all those except for maybe Mr. Fox. I don't think I ever read.
That one's, I think, significantly shorter. Not that it matters.
Yeah, I don't think I had any exposure.
If you saw the Wes Anderson film, Weird Divergence, I think. I mean, it's still like thematically the same, but I recall the book being different enough. Not that it matters. If you had to sort of describe a main theme across all Roald Dahl books, what would you say?
Yeah, I feel like they're often stories of kids who just don't like being kids because adults don't treat them well, and they're getting away from the adults in their lives.
That is exactly right. They often feature what I would call abusive or mean adults, and they are regularly the antagonists. And it turns out that, like, not to be a big downer, but like it's related to like Roald Dahl's like youth experience. Growing up as a kid, he was regularly abused in the British boarding school system.
Oh.
So, you know, we're talking early 1900s when Roald Dahl was coming up. One example, and so this isn't necessarily trivia for you. This is just kind of an interesting story about Roald Dahl. In a real occurrence, when he was 8 in the year 1924, Roald Dahl and some of his friends went to a local candy store, and they hated the woman who ran it. This lady he hated so much would eventually serve as his reference for Miss Trunchbull in Matilda.
Get in the car, Melinda.
Matilda.
Whatever.
Headmistress that's like abusive and like incredibly violent, if you think of the Meryl Wilson film and Danny DeVito film.
That's not a line you want on your your obituary there.
was the inspiration for Miss Trunchbull. So him and his friends hated this woman who ran the sweets shop so much, they decided to prank her. And a prank in 1924 meant they put a dead mouse in a jar of gobstoppers in her candy shop.
Yeah, health code violations are pretty funny.
They're timeless. In 1924, you were probably allowed at least one mouse in a candy jar.
Yeah, that might not even get you shut down.
That's probably like a B. Yeah. Speaking of, you know, so they stop by the story goes, they stop by the candy shop the next day and they want to see if their prank landed or whatever. And the shop's closed and they look in the window and they see a broken jar on the floor. And the boys are like, got her, got him. But somehow, presumably because they're young boys in Britain and they don't like her and she doesn't like them, it comes out that, you know, they're the ones who did it. She finds out, she rats them out to the school and the boys are caned. And caning is you just beat somebody with a cane, which is, a switch basically, right? It is effectively being whipped.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's Roald Dahl's in a nutshell. And then he became a prolific children's author, but it turns out, you know, they say write what you know. And so like clearly he held some grudges against the adults in his life in vulnerable times of his life as a child and wanted to tell stories probably about executing on the fantasy of like getting away from that and living a good youthful life.
Yeah, it's kind of a downer to hear that, knowing that all these stories of my childhood were kind of inspired by,
built on pain,
literal child abuse. So
yeah, Roald Dahl is fascinating in general, like, and we're just sort of, I would recommend at some point like you like read up on him, because like he was also, you know, he fought in the war, and you know, he's an interesting character all around, so it's worth a look. But the reason I bring it up, gobstoppers, obviously, like that's what I wanted to talk about today.
Sure. You got any? I only need one.
Very nice. Actually, you know, interestingly enough, I think of Gobstoppers as, you remember Nestle bought the Wonka brand sometime, yeah, and they released the Everlasting Gobstoppers, which was a lie.
Yeah.
Because they were like chewy candies.
30 minutes at best.
Do you know what a Gobstopper like effectively is? Like what we would call one in America?
No.
A Gobstopper is a jawbreaker.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I couldn't think of the name, but that's what I was thinking of. Yeah.
And it was sort of like, not to get into another weird rabbit hole, but like, it's sort of interesting how they make them. They start with some small seed, which could literally be like a chia seed or like an anise seed or something. And then they do what's called sugar panning, where they're like, you basically are just layer and layer of sugar on top until you get the size of Gobstopper or Jawbreaker that you want.
And it's like different colors, right?
That's yeah. I mean, thing. It's like, yeah, they color the sugar differently and, sure, and whatever. But yeah, I had no idea those were the same thing.
So is there a Nestle Gobstopper brand that, I don't remember.
Well, so yeah, now we're getting kind of way off on a tangent. So at some point Nestle bought the rights to the Wonka name. And so they released, you know, Wonka Nerds and Wonka Everlasting Gobstoppers. And they were about the size of a Gobstopper, not a helpful metric, the size of like a pea. And they were not like the hard, they had a hard candy shell, but they were something you could still bite into. Whereas like a proper Gobstopper or a proper Jawbreaker literally gets its name because if you try to just crunch through it, can cause you dental damage.
Quick question. Is this just one of those issues where there's like a different name for things in British English versus American English?
Gobstopper versus Jawbreaker? Yes.
I mean, like, do they call that part of your mouth the gob?
I mean, surely you've heard gobsmacked as a term.
Wow. Mind blown.
I can't tell if that's a put on or not.
I don't know. Gobsmacked. I'd never thought about that being like a part of
your face
that you're being smacked in.
Yeah, your gob. Yeah, is your mouth. I don't know how, like in modern British parlance, I don't know how many people are saying gob just as like general reference. I think you might hear like a shut your gob, mate, isn't it?
Like in Australia, maybe.
Yeah, same thing. I mean, it was just a penal colony, so what's it matter?
Sure, sure. Yeah, I just wonder. It's like, you know, the boot of a car, right? And yeah, it's like, punch him right in the jaw or punch him right in the gob. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I thought we were going to dovetail into this other thing, which is sort of sad to say. Not really. I mean, Nestle sold off the Wonka brand at some point. First of all, they had at some point renamed Wonka to Candy Shop. And then Candy Shop got sold off, I think, to like Ferrero. And then Ferrero in like 2018, 2019, 2020, somewhere in the last handful of years. And then they shut down the Wonka brand. So how
are they branding those candies today?
Well, interestingly enough, like there are no Gobstoppers to be purchased at this time, but they are coming back as of 2024. But that's not what we're actually here to talk about. Although Gobstoppers will feature prominently, we're here to talk about Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, the pinball machine themed off of the Gene Wilder movie from the 70s. Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, as a pinball machine, I should point out, is Jersey Jack's last game that was manufactured in New Jersey.
Oh.
So Jersey Jack, not just a clever name, presumably, was reference to their location, but they have since moved operations to,
I'm guessing, Chicago.
Illinois, for sure. Probably Chicago in 2020, the pinball capital of the world. Presumably. I think so.
That's a fair label.
There's actually not a ton of like interesting tidbits or fun facts about this machine itself that's out there. So instead, I just want to talk a little bit about like, you know, kind of what's interesting to see on it, some of the objectives we can look out for when we go to test this machine, and then any kind of cool gimmicks that may or may not be there that may be there. It'd be weird to talk about things that may not be there. Anyway, there's an embedded TV screen in the machine that's going to show details on your current mode, you know, flash through footage of the film, and it sits what looks like over a couple of like different shot lanes. And so there is, I think, different callouts that can come out on the screen visually to tell you like hit this one or hit this one or whatever. Because if you look at like a picture of it, there is, yeah, a couple of lanes underneath it. There are some lights under there, but I believe the screen also tries to point you in the right direction.
Okay.
As far as objectives go, the Jersey Jack website has a flow chart of all of the different shots that you can look out for. And boy, howdy, is it intimidating looking. So I'm going to talk to you about a couple of the easy ones because we're not going to have a lot of time with this machine. Speaking of gobstoppers, there is a big toy in the lower left area of the playfield that looks like the everlasting gobstopper from that 70s movie, sure. Which, by the way, looks nothing like a gobstopper.
It looks more like a caltrop, like
something
that's going to maybe like stop a horse in like medieval Europe or
caltrop
something.
Caltrop is great. Yeah. Because in my head, I was like a jack from the children's game Jacks, but those are just caltrops.
Yeah. With maybe like less pointy edges.
Less.
Well, unless you're at a boarding school in Britain in the early 20th century.
That's actually how kids started. You had to be extra quick and careful.
Yeah.
Jacks.
You will. In Britain. You'll lose a finger. Like literally.
For sure. So the shtick there, it guides your eyes to it is what it looks like. And the flowchart says, if you hit the gobstopper, it's going to rotate on the playfield, and then it's going to open a scoop. And if you shoot into that scoop, it would lock balls to start an early multi-ball. So that seems like a good thing to focus on early.
Okay.
There is, as you would expect in a Willy Wonka game, a lot of different shots to collect different candies. It's unclear looking at this flowchart which of those that I want to focus on, but as you collect candy, it advances different modes. You advance modes, you collect golden tickets. You get enough golden tickets, you get a wizard mode. Similarly, there are a bunch of different shots that would unlock, Wonka's different victims. I mean, children that are visiting the factory. And then you start sort of mini multi-balls by hitting those children shots. And then you collect the children, which seems very Wonka now that I think about it, collecting children.
It seems very Roald Dahl that we are hitting children.
Yeah, you're right. And so like I said, each mode that finishes, you collect a golden ticket. You get 5 golden tickets, apropos of the movie. And that will start the wizard mode, which is called Pure Imagination.
Oh, that's cute.
It's cute. Presumably it would play that song. We'll have to see if we can get there. Although honestly, looking at this flowchart, I doubt it.
So do I have to look at the flowchart while I'm playing the game, or do I have to memorize it? Or
I'm hoping it's going to be intuitive. We'll see.
Oof.
But it is a little overwhelming to look at, if I'm being real. As far as kind of cool gimmicks to look out for in the machine itself, the gobstopper that rotates sounds like something that would be interesting to focus on. There is a TV screen in the playfield. There is a person who just walked into this building. So you may have heard that audio, but we're going to roll with it. You know, that's what we do. There's a TV screen that we'll see like how they incorporate that appropriately. And as is the case in a lot of Jersey Jack machines, there is a camera embedded in the backboard of the game, presumably to take pictures if you score high enough or something. So we'll see if that comes into play at all in any meaningful or fun way. But it does, again, seem kind of common to any Jersey Jack machine that's out there, as far as I know.
I think I've seen it on a few, yeah.
Okay. Any other kind of questions, thoughts about the Wonka machine before we dive in?
No, I'll just print out my flowchart and let's go.
All right. All right, welcome back. Drew, what? Give me your initial impressions. Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory pinball.
I think, like we talked about, it was complicated. I have not really spent a lot of time with Jersey Jack machines, and I got to say, like, they're not approachable, it feels like, at least this one.
Yeah, 100% agree. We'll talk more about Pat Lawler and his design, I think, a little bit later. But once again, it felt like it's not for our level of player, which is sort of enthusiast, hobbyist, but not putting in hours and hours and hours and hours time on specific machines to learn them and conquer them.
Yeah.
So it did feel a little bit opaque. What else?
I think that's an interesting point you brought up about not putting in lots of hours, because I feel like that was, you know, the explicit purpose of pinball machines in past decades, but that's not what I want out of a machine, but I want kind of something that is immediately fun for me to play.
Yeah. I mean, I want something where I feel like there is a good growth curve, you know,
sure.
Something that kind of hooks me to come back and improve on my skills. Like the hard part is I don't have time to put 6 hours in, you know, a week on a particular machine to learn it and conquer it. So I want something where I come to it, it feels intuitive, and there is like a sense of progression, or I'm getting better at it at our level of skill. Any other initial impressions before we sort of dive into anything?
I think that I really liked some aspects of the theming of the game, like the cool gobstopper spinning around was a lot of fun, but I didn't really care for the gameplay, but we'll get into that, I guess.
Yeah. If I had to kind of share my initial impressions, I think I would very much echo like the fact that it's never incredibly clear on what I was supposed to be doing while I was doing it. And that's even the fact that I had looked up some of these different shots. I just felt like, boy, this is a little difficult to understand while I'm in the middle of the gameplay, what I'm going after.
Yeah.
But I would say there is at least the fact that the Gobstopper multi-ball is very, very accessible. I think I was able to get that every game I played. So it was nice that there is at least some thought about like this big, obvious, shiny toy. If I just like mash towards that, good things will happen.
Yeah, that's usually my approach when trying out a new pinball machine. So that's true.
So I did, in fairness to that, I think that those were my two main impressions. So as we dive into things, I like to remind, I think everyone that as we are sort of enthusiasts and hobbyists, we're trying to come at our understanding of pinball machines from our perspective. And in order to kind of dissect that, we look across three different areas of focus. One being theme. How well does the theme of the machine tie into the way that it works? Like, do you feel like it's part of whatever universe or story it's trying to tell? And does it tell that story effectively? There's the element of fun, which I like to think about is how hooked am I? Like, how much do I want to pump quarters into this thing and keep coming back and playing it? And then there's this element of design, which comes back to me as this idea of how do the mechanical widgets on the board function? How are they unique? Like, how satisfying are those mechanics? Those are the ways I like to think about them. Any thoughts about those three areas of focus?
No, I think that makes sense. Yeah.
Great. So let's start, let's just start with theme. I'll kick us off and then I'll flip it to you and then you can lead us off on fun. As far as theme goes, I thought like the color scheme like really tied into the theme. So there's a heavy use of different LEDs, both in the play area and like on toys and rails and things. And I thought that was very, very well used. There are different colorful bursts of like pink and blue and that kind of make you feel like you're in sort of a magical kind of candy land. And then there was an Oompa Loompa type of mode that I got that was focused on like chocolate bars. And so theming became brown and green.
Yeah, I got that green and brown one too. And something about those specific shades of LEDs, it just like immediately made me think of Wonka, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah. I thought that was an incredible use of lighting as far as, tying into theme goes. Besides the colors though, I felt like the layout of the machine felt kind of claustrophobic and it didn't make me feel like moving the ball around the play field. It didn't feel like whimsical or it didn't feel like factory. Like I would have loved to have seen like more Wonka kind of things, right? Like a weird conveyor belt or that weird stupid train thing that happens late in the movie when they're going to go.
They're on the, like the riverboat.
The riverboat would also be great. Like a riverboat reference. And I'm sure there must be one in the game, but like, I want like a toy or a mechanic that like feels like you're chugging along or like Automaton or Rube Goldberg or something.
I feel like it's a pretty obvious play to have some sort of factory mechanic. And it just felt kind of like a pinball machine, right? Which of course it is, but it didn't feel like a pinball machine set in a Wonka factory.
Yes. Yeah. So for me, honestly, my only notes. I think the LEDs are great, and I think everything else theme-wise, yeah, you said it, is just a pinball machine.
Yeah, I have very similar thoughts on the theming. I did actually really like a couple of the toys, so like the Gobstopper toy and the Oompa Loompa toy I thought were kind of cool, but like they felt kind of tacked on to an otherwise sort of sterile, uninteresting playfield. And so it's hard to give, great high marks for theming when it just feels like, they screwed on some pieces of plastic that remind you of the movie.
Yeah, very much agreed. And so as we go in and rank things, we try to rank them on a scale of 1 to 5, basically 5 being the best. And as far as theme goes, I think because of just how magical that lighting was, like for me, this is a solid middle of the pack. This is a 3 out of 5 theming.
Yeah, I did something that I think you have frowned upon in the past, and I gave it a half point, so I put 2.5.
It's fine.
I don't know why I did that. That's just how I was feeling. Don't question my feelings.
Yeah, Mark. Feel your feelings, Drew. You know I say that all the time.
Yeah.
2.5. Okay, it's going to have to change all the code, allow for floating points. It's for doubles. It's fine. All right, so let's talk about fun then. So, you know, how much did this game keep you coming back and you felt like, oh, yeah, like I get it and I'm here. I could play this all day. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, I think none of the shots felt like fun shots. Like, I don't know, I get a kick out of hitting a really satisfying tight loop or a ramp that you hit just right. And I feel like for me, none of the shots really ever clicked in that way. And I don't know, maybe I was all pinballed out for the week or something, but I didn't have a lot of fun. I'm going to throw a couple other, I don't know, cons on the list here, is that I didn't care for the camera. You know, the like taking pictures, that was not actually very fun for me to, I guess if you know it's coming, maybe it's okay. But I was kind of taken aback by having my picture taken and like shown with my high score. And like, I don't know, it wasn't a very flattering picture either. So maybe that's my problem.
Yeah, it was weird because it took like two pictures, one almost to like alert you that, hey, you're on camera. And like that one, you're like, definitely looking down at the play field and like, you know, you look like a goober. And then the second one, I think is like if you're entering your initials or like you're looking finally at the backboard and it's a better photo, but agreed, it would almost be nice if there was like a countdown that and like look here or something.
Yeah,
so
like a flashing arrow pointing where to look and like, you know, a countdown would be great. One thing that I thought was interesting on the, you know, the fun of it was that, you know, assuming you get to this machine relatively early in the day, you're going to get a high score. Because like a lot of Jersey Jack machines, they have daily high scores. And so that's kind of neat, but only for a little bit until you realize that like, oh, everybody gets a daily high score.
Okay. All right. Show off. Yeah. Anything else? Anything else in the fun bracket before I share some ideas?
Well, yeah, I guess just that like it was fun, but it feels to me like it wouldn't last. Like, I don't think I would enjoy coming back to this machine frequently.
Yeah, it's interesting. One thing you said, and I have a bigger note about it in design, was that you felt like there was nothing really like clicking or satisfying shot wise. And I felt like there were a few shot sequences that when you got them felt awesome because it felt like I really earned it because it felt like there were some what I would call tough but fair kind of shots. And so like I enjoyed that because there was like a combo shot that I could hit pretty regularly that was just super cool. And that always feels really fun when you feel kind of in sync with the machine.
Yeah, needless to say, I didn't have that experience.
On the other hand, I felt like, you know, there was nothing about it that left me, you know, wanting more. A game would end, I kind of felt like, yeah, all right, what else is here? And so like for me, that's a little bit tough to like really rate. So I gave this a 2 out of 5. And for me, it's really about the fact that like, and I think a large part of this is probably theme, like fun and theme for me tied together very nicely. And so like, you know, a game ended and I was just like, okay.
I don't know what it is about this machine specifically that didn't really draw me in. I didn't feel like I was immersed in the game, whether it was just because the shots weren't fun or the theme wasn't there. I feel you though.
Yeah. So, and you gave it a,
I gave it a 3 out of 5, but like very tepid 3.
Okay. No half scores there.
No,
you were over it by then.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So let's talk about design. So I want to kind of lead in onto this that I think design wise, like, first of all, there was either a problem with the specific machine we're playing, or maybe this is a problem with other Jersey Jacks or this machine across all production units. Regularly, I had a ball that would just jump over the flippers because it was getting shot out of a rail or a scoop so hard, or it was bouncing off a slingshot or something, and like with just such velocity that it would just hop over the flipper.
Yeah.
I drained multiple times across both our practice and competition games.
I feel like that's got to be like either a production defect or a maintenance issue or something.
I got to feel like you got to go into the maintenance screen and just turn down flipper, like turn down power levels or something. Cause I know that's a thing you can do on modern machines, mm-hmm. But it was really kind of frustrating in a way that I didn't enjoy when it would pop up and over flippers or, you know, elements of the machine. And whether that is the fault of the design or not, it leaves a poor impression. And since we only kind of get to test one machine on one day, you know, that does work against it, I think. On that end, I do want to dive into those, you know, the sequence shots I was talking about that I thought was pretty like cool from a game design point of view. There is, you know, near the TV screen in the upper area, there is at a certain point, and I forget how you unlock it, you have to hit with the upper flipper up and around. There's sort of like you hit the center lane and it becomes like it like orbits over to the left side. And as it comes down the left side, the ball drapes across your upper left flipper. And then you have to whip it across the center play field into like a side target or somewhere over there. And it was just kind of a cool combo shot that would happen. So like, you know, you would hit it up there. The ball would actually lock on the left side for a second to like tell you, oh yeah, now you got to hit it over the center play field and give you like a countdown. And I was able to hit that a handful of times. And I think that's like a really cool combo sequence. And I don't know if I've ever seen a combo shot where like pauses in the combo to like guide you and say like, hey, dummy,
oh, I
hit it to the far right side.
I feel like that's a pretty common thing, actually.
Is it?
Yeah.
Where it pauses mid combo?
Yeah. I'm thinking one I played recently. And you know, we haven't talked about it on the podcast yet, sure. But Simpsons has a very similar kind of mechanic.
Oh, really?
Where it like holds the ball for you and has like an upper flipper to hit it across the play field.
And I like kind of like, does it, because so the thing about
it's
the
like a flashing light or something.
Yeah. Like would flash a light, mm-hmm. and the flipper would actually flip to like, let you know it's yep, this flipper.
Same.
Okay. So maybe that is like more, it's a mechanic I haven't seen before.
I see.
And I kind of like that as far as design goes. I also thought from like a kind of cool, unique, there are things that rotate on play areas all the time, but I'm kind of a sucker for good, like mechanical design. So the gobstopper rotation to open a scoop, that's kind of cool.
That was probably, yeah, my favorite like design element. It was cool.
And my last real note is that there's a right ramp and it's in like the bottom right area of the play field, you know, mid right, I guess. There were a number of times where like a shot or a combo or a sequence or whatever was like, hit the right ramp. And for whatever reason, couldn't do it on command if I wanted to. And I just felt really upset about it. So that's not really a good game design issue, probably so much as a player skill issue. But whenever I run into something that just seems like at a certain point, there has to be a way for those to be more accessible. I don't know.
Yeah. I guess I don't really know what it is about some machines that it feels like you're just able to hit the shots easier. I mean, is it just they have like wider entrances?
Yeah, or it's
like
hard to know.
Better control of the flipper. I don't know, but I agree. I did not feel like the shots were very accessible to me. And I guess I just usually didn't know what I was supposed to be doing on the machine.
Yeah, despite the flowchart, and it's like it's that thing where you're like, you know, there's one thing like from like reading it, looking at like, this is what I want to do. There's another thing like when the ball is moving around and all those lights are flashing where you're just sort of like, a lot of those lanes are obscured. Targets feel sort of obscured because like it's like a busy play field in some ways.
Yeah. And I think that there's a real over-reliance on the screens.
Yeah.
The big screen up on the back glass, of course, but then also the Wonka Vision screen where instructions would be there or like, yeah, you know, lane markers. And I just can't look at those when I'm playing pinball.
Yeah, it's tough because like you've got to track the ball, right? Yeah. Like first and foremost. And it was zipping around, like it was really flying.
Yeah,
yeah. So for me, I do recognize again that I think like there is a skill. Obviously, there's a skill gap. Like when I look at and play machines, and so I recognize that some of this design probably plays very, very well for like hardcore pinball players. But if I'm looking at this and trying to evaluate it for like how accessible is this design for everyday pinball players, it, you know, it's just like it's middle of the pack. Like it feels like it can be, it feels like I can pop off a good game when I every now and again, but otherwise I feel like I'm just wasting my time. And so it's sort of middle of the pack for me. It's a 3 out of 5.
Yeah, I gave it a little lower score. I gave it a 2 out of 5. I think it's just because it didn't feel like an approachable design or a pinball game to me as a casual person. I think that there's probably a pretty high skill ceiling for this machine where if you learn the rules and if you learn the exact timings on the shots, you can probably really have some high scores and a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But I wasn't there.
Yeah, fair enough. So as we always do at the end of the evaluation period, we play it to evaluate it a few times and then we play some competitive head-to-head games just to see who that day is victorious. Otherwise, what's the point of all of this, right? Knowledge. Pfft, why? So I, you know, it's interesting too. And we didn't really talk about it. It sort of feels like a low scoring machine. And maybe that was because I remember even looking at the leaderboards. Like I don't, you know, not popping like huge, huge numbers, but you know, my high score was 1,097,400. And that felt like a great game. Like I felt like I was killing it. And I was just sort of shocked that that's in most machines, sort of a very low score.
Yeah. I just barely broke 1,000,000 as well. A little bit under you. I had 1,025,000 and I didn't quite catch the last three digits, but it was definitely below you.
Yeah. Well, you know, and it was again, a good competitive game. And that was a busy place where we were able to play the machine that day. So, you know, so it goes sometimes, but you know what happens to the loser, don't you, Drew?
Tell me, Mark.
You get nothing. You lose. Good day, sir.